This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 26th of June, 1951. The title of this lecture is Chart of Human Evaluation, Part 1. This lecture is 54 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Your seminar leaders are complaining. They got no questions. Either everybody was asleep yesterday or something. It couldn't possibly be that plain. Maybe I'm oversimplifying everything. I get a kick on this oversimplification gag. Today, I'm stepping up your schedules a little bit. Because there have been three or four questions asked regarding the formations of groups and the running of groups and so on. And because it's very possible that within the next few months, we will be branching out into groups. Group Dianetics won't be out for many months yet. But at the same time, if I cover this work in three lectures, lengthening the lectures a little bit, I can possibly get in on the fourth day a summary lecture on group Dianetics. There's quite a bit about group Dianetics, and there's quite a bit that could help you out in the formation of groups, and there's also quite a little bit that has to do with the formation of the group of the auditor and preclear. That's a group too. And if you would like that, I can change the schedule, just put a little bit more into these first three lectures and cover with the last one, group Dianetics, which also would, by the way, cover the future organizational plan of the foundation of groups in the field and so forth. We are rather heavily involved here with the formation of a new organization. The National Association, its relationship to the foundation, the individual's relationship to it, what it can possibly do, and so forth. It's quite a little bit about groups that one doesn't ordinarily suspect. And if you wish, I will cover these lectures in that fashion. Would you like that? Okay. Now today we take up this instrument known as the Chart of Human Evaluation and the Chart of Dianetic Processing. Really, I will take up today as much as possible human evaluation and its relationship to processing. And tomorrow, we'll take up processing as such, and in particular, this new method of processing. The chart here has been designed to overcome certain objections simply by running the chart up from 0 to 100 and then running it from 100 to 1,000. Boom. Leaving a margin in there which is sufficient to expand above 4.0. There have been a lot of criticisms of the fact that, well, you set a finite limit on it and 4.0 is an absolute and so on. Well, let's take the absolute quantity of it off, because actually there's quite a little evidence kicking around that there is material above 4.0, quite a bit of it. It very well may be that most of it is above 4.0. But it says right here, it says capabilities only partly explored there from 100 to 900 in column C. And up there at 1,000, it says ultimate capabilities unknown. Well, this seems to invite that one of these days we may get to a point where we know them. Then we'll extend the chart to 2,000. Now, the reason for this chart is the fact that something had to be done about spotting people so that the proper process could be used on those people so that errors would be less. That was the original reason. And it developed from there into its own useful sphere of human evaluation. The way you read this chart is just as it says. There, you really don't have to have a great deal of technical background. You don't have to worry about what is the theta which is going to be on the case, or how much n theta or something of the sort. You just start asking a person questions and he'll spot himself on the chart for you. Just like that. You don't have to worry about whether you're addressing the analytical side of his reasoning or the other factors. All you're interested in is getting somebody with enough response to tell you. Of course, if they don't respond and they won't answer your questions and so forth, you can spot them on the chart too rather easily. There's really nothing much to it until an auditor starts going into it and asking whys and wherefores. Well, you're supposed to be experts, so we better know the background music to this chart. If we know the background music, then we will be able to use it, handle it very adequately, and actually, if you know it well enough, you can simply extrapolate the whole chart. Do it in your head. You don't need this chart after you get used to the reasons of why and wherefore. Of course, this chart has another use, domination by nullification. Can always use a weapon or two. And as a matter of fact, you can certainly take the wind out of almost any pre-clear's sails merely by showing him where he is on his tone, on the tone scale. If you care to do this, stand by to process your pre-clear immediately, because you probably spin him. That's the first thing which somebody does with this chart, is look himself up on it. And then he goes around and he says, "My God, it can't be that bad." So he promptly goes around and starts asking people to say that it isn't that bad. And people very foolishly believe that he is trying to find confirmation. So people agree with him. "Yes, I always knew you were a 05. Didn't you know it?" Well, that's bad manners. And where it affects a pre-clear, it is actually just asking him to go into a very steep decline. The pre-clear will ask you and badger you sometimes. What he's asking you to do is to say no, usually. And he will really keep it up until you say yes, and then he'll spin. So don't ever be led into that trap. Point out in the book that nobody is supposed to confirm or negate somebody else's evaluation on himself or something of the sort and say, "Well, it's true, it's right here in the book." Very simple. If you do that, you'll have very little trouble. Now, there's something insidious about this chart, in that if you find a person on the low line of 3, 4, 5 columns in human evaluation, the chances are you will find him actually on the rest of the columns. But in talking to him, you might not spot some of those other columns. But he'll lie in that band. It's terrible. I mean, let's just talk about now interpersonal relations and human conduct. And it's a pretty snide, horrible picture. If you find somebody down here along the line of depository illnesses, arthritis, range 1020, you know that this fellow gets mad quite a bit. And sometimes you kind of suspect his dope. You know that he has a bit of an anesthesia to present time pain. You just know those things. You can go across the rest of the list and you'll find out what he's doing or what he's capable of doing. And it's true, he is capable of doing that. We've checked quite a few people on this chart. And we have in this society what is known as a social veneer. Social veneer is an interesting manifestation. It's what the society demands of the individual. But the social veneer, quite ordinarily, is not sufficient to really damp out the actual behavior level of the individual. That, one would say, would be the social education to which a person has been subjected all through the years. Shut up, you little brat, you know, education. This sort of a life, we're living in a whole social order today which says that the proper way to enforce social conduct is to knock the hell out of people. Now, that's a great philosophy. That's the punishment drive theory. That is a messed theory. A society which runs along on that level is pretty low on the tone scale. It's certainly got more messed in it than theta. If a person steals, well, the thing to do is to punish him. Now, we don't take a club to people these days. What we do is take away space and time on them, send them to prison, in other words. Take some mess away from them. We deprive them, in other words, of some of their control of mess. Naturally, if you do this to an individual, he goes down the tone scale. The society is most satisfied when they have a criminal in apathy. But a criminal in apathy is a pretty dangerous character to have around. You better have a criminal in anger than in apathy. Because when he starts to blow in the apathy line, he really blows. In the anger line, he might take it out in an occasional dramatization. But where it comes to a punishment drive society, your social veneer is a pretty forced proposition. People really get knocked around. Consequently, your pre-clears can be expected to have been thoroughly educated into the fact that they have to be social. They have to be agreeable. They have to be this and they have to be that. This runs straight through anybody you're going to process. Now, you could actually pick off of this case his social education. You'd find him coming up the tone scale. But you'd find something else happening a little bit. You'd uninhibit him a trifle. It isn't true that you would unbalance him to a point where he would suddenly start doing antisocial things. You're just picking up some of the suppression off of him. But he is giving a present time manifestation which has social veneer as its manifestation. For instance, if somebody gives you something, you say thank you. The reason you say thank you is not because you appreciate it, but because you get your head knocked off when you're a little kid if you don't say thank you. It's a very simple equation. Not saying thank you equals being slapped. So you've got a whole, you might say, an engram line of action there. It's reactive. Social conduct is to a large degree reactive. It is not a training pattern, it's a habit pattern. Differentiating between habit patterns and training patterns, meaning that a habit pattern is something which is beaten into a person or enforced upon him or comes from reactive commands, and a training pattern being something that is educated into the individual. So you take a look at the surface manifestation of the individual, and you'll find there a great deal of social education. This chart penetrates straight through this social education because it compartments the things which actually hinge, I mean, on which a person's conduct really hinge. What do you want to know about human beings? Ethic level, how they handle truth, their courage level, ability to handle responsibility. You want to know whether or not if she says, I love you, whether or not she does. There's a lot of interesting things you would like to know about human beings. Well, you go through the thank you veneer of social conduct. You reach down to this other level, ethics, truth, the rest of these things that are really amount to something. and you'll find that the little tabs which spot them on these columns are sticking out all over the place. They really stick out. Now, whenever you start in with a pre-clear, you're liable to make the error of taking his social educational level. The lady walks in. She sits down. Her clothes are very nice. She's nicely kept. She carries her pocketbook neatly. She sits down. She crosses her legs modestly. She sits there, and the makeup on her face is on straight, and it's the very best makeup. And she says, please and thank you. And in other words, she goes through and is a complete social automaton. And you say, this girl, so-and-so, obviously you are dealing with a civilized human being. Oh, yeah? How do you know? Well, the truth of the matter is you don't. Not until you begin to find out a few things concerning this person's agreement, where do they lie on speech, what is her attitude toward children, et cetera, right along the chart level. And the first thing you know, you will find somebody who is actually, perhaps, let's be unoptimistic about it, you'll find somebody who is terrifically promiscuous, sadistic, and actually who probably will one of these fine days cave in somebody's life form, knock apart the environment in general and in particular. This is not a civilized human being. This is punishment drive veneer, which is carrying this person forward. Now, as auditors, you're not interested in social veneer. What you're interested in is how you process this person and approximately what you have to look for in this person. That's what you're interested in. You could take this girl and say, well, she is a civilized human being, therefore she probably lies around 2530. She responds perfectly well. I asked her to run out a cut finger and she said that she could feel the pain. She moves on the time track. The thing to do is to find basic and process the case. So you go to basic and she runs halfway through an n-gram and she sticks right in the middle of the n-gram and she can't come to present time. So you decide to run another n-gram. So she really can't come to present time now. So you decide to get an earlier n-gram and you run that, and that's got a grouper in it and her track collapses. And then you say to her, come up to present time, and that brings all the somatics to present time, and then you say, well, I can't do very much for you, and she walks away. She's a wreck. Well, she was a wreck before she walked in there, of course, but you've just accentuated the wreckedness of the person. The point is that this case will tell you one thing and run another. If this case has had any slightest instruction on how to be audited, this case can put on a beautiful show of being audited and never be audited at all, never leave present time. Truth level and everything else just all shot to the devil. The horrible fact is that this case would rather tell you something phony than tell you something true. It isn't a matter of whether or not this person is afraid of you finding out something. It's just mechanically a fact that this person will lie in preference to telling the truth. So you ask this person to run out an n-gram that has to do with when her finger was cut. She will go back to a time when she was driving a car. And you say, are you there now with that cut finger? And she'll say, oh, yes, driving merrily down the road in the car. And you say, well, now, where does it hurt? Oh, yes, I can feel the pain. Driving down the road in the car. And by this time, she's sort of drifted off. She's gotten bored with the whole thing, and she's looking at a butterfly or something. Wonderful. After you've processed this person for a little while, quote, processed, unquote, you suddenly decide that this case isn't getting well somehow. Didn't getting along. There's something wrong here. And this isn't dub in like you knew it was, but you keep on valiantly trying to do something for this person. And then one day she's bored with being audited. She's tired of lying on the couch, really doing nothing and telling you that she is doing something. And so she suddenly shows up as an inaccessible case. And she said, I really don't like to be audited. I hate it. I'm just doing it to oblige you. This case will also make weird cracks at you sometimes about, you know, I never seem to be able to get any grief off my auditor. Sure. If this person's at 05, the actual truth of what this person is trying to do is make the auditor feel bad. This case isn't trying to get better. This case is trying to make somebody else feel bad. I never get any grief off of my auditor. So she doesn't consider that her auditing is successful. She's not able to depress or kill anybody. Now, you start to get the horrible dangers that you run as auditors. Now, something else that's very funny about this case. This case down along, this case is a 05. The promiscuity which this case can achieve is much, that says 1-1 promiscuous. But, a 05, it should have a little notation in there that says much more promiscuous. Because the 05 flatly does not give a doggone about any type of conduct, ethical, sexual, anything else. You will read in texts of ancient cults which have been taken out of the ruins of New York, APA, and so forth. There's an archaeological study going on at this time, by the way, trying to establish what type of culture that was. In the ruins there, you'll find notations to the effect that people immediately after a death in the family become sexually promiscuous or something of the sort. This is really true. You take some widow who is crying in her beer or somebody who has just lost somebody, and there's a setup. But it's this kind of a setup. It's got beautiful grapes hung around it and a beautiful festooned arbor with a landmine sitting in the center of it. Because you have anything to do with this case, this case has really one ambition. This case is trying to die. But it would be a little more successful if it could make you die too. So, as an auditor, the wrong way to open up the accessibility of this case would be to sleep with it. I merely put that in as a gentle caution, not because anything like that happens in Dianetics, because it was so prevalent in psychiatry before psychiatry collapsed. As a matter of fact, I speak with complete authority on the matter. I would never speak anything about psychiatry without authoritative references. There's a book by Sigrid Frida Fromme Reichmann. That's the proper way to pronounce her name, I think. Frida wrote a book, something about intensive psychiatric practitioners. A handbook of. Yeah, well, that's a great book. You ought to read that book someday. It beats a comic book. It goes in there and it says the psychiatrist should be very, very wary indeed of taking out all of his satisfaction on his patients. It says you shouldn't do that all the time. It also says psychiatrists should stay awake. Said the practice of sleeping around the patient while the patient is talking is not as much prevalent in modern schools as it was a few years ago, and it's gradually dying out. That's right. It's a handbook of intensive psychotherapy by Dr. Frida Fromme Reichmann. You're actually living in a different atmosphere entirely than psychotherapy had. It's a different climate in Dianetics. And you really ought to look it over and find out what kind of a climate psychotherapy had as an archaeological fact. Okay. Now, The reason why psychotherapy could fall into these booby traps is that it didn't have its goal well aligned. Bluntly true. Its goal was never defined, actually. You can look in vain, and you won't find a precisely defined goal for psychotherapy. You will find stated in psychopathology and texts on that subject and around in the field occasionally that what they're trying to do is adjust an individual to his environment. You'll find this statement made, but you will not find much of an amplification of that. And that, of course, you recognize to be a very dangerous thing to do, to adjust a man well to his environment. That is dangerous, because there's nothing quite so changing as this environment. One of these days, next week, next month, next year, 5 years from now, or 20 years from now, somebody's going to dump a cargo of atom bombs on America, and we're not going to have soda pop, and so forth, and the environment is going to shift to some slight degree. If everyone were well adjusted to this environment of jukeboxes and all the rest of it, and the environment shifted suddenly, and none of us were able to make a campfire or boil beans or make a rabbit trap or something of the sort, if all of us were unable to do this, if there weren't some of us still holding on to techniques which adjusted them to other environments elsewhere, or if we did not have the adaptability of adjusting to this brand new environment, we would really be dead ducks. So adjusting to the environment's non-survival. So it's not a good goal. Now, adjusting to the environment, if it's non-survival, would postulate that it would send people down the tone scale in order to accomplish this. And this is exactly what those psychotherapies accomplished. And it's a very funny thing, but the modus operandi of the electric shock, the prefrontal lobotomy, insulin shock, and I told you about this new one we're going to have about dry ice processing, all of these things depress a person on the tone scale or cut out his endowment to some slight degree. We find that this is a dangerous thing to do. If a psychotherapy continues along in that line, it will eventually place in a country a preponderance of insane. It might be that the number of insane in the country might get up to 19 million. It just might. As a matter of fact, it has. That is the goal of that, is going down the tone scale. But that goal has not been evaluated. They are really practitioners in that field who are trying to help people, to try earnestly, honestly to help people. That they haven't got the tools is another question. But some of the things that they use, quite beneficial. I mean, there are a lot of odds and ends. If somebody comes in and he's just got somebody to talk to and he hasn't got another friend in the whole world and the psychoanalyst is very friendly to him and so on, he's got ARC and he'll come up the tone scale. Beneficial. Furthermore, he has been told that the person can help him. So when he goes to this person who's supposed to be able to help him, he assumes that he's helped. There's that one. Quite in addition to that, there are numbers of people in the field of psychiatry and psychoanalysis who are very far from hewing to the line. They are using anything that comes into their heads in order to make these people better and happier. These people are inventive, they're working hard, they're in a highly aberrative environment, and so on, and they're trying their level best to do something. And they're sort of picking it out of a hat to do it, too. And the reason why they have to pick it out of the hat is because there isn't even an established line in psychotherapy or psychoanalysis. Every third practitioner you meet, he's following somebody else. And these all conflict with each other, and it's a very confused picture. What you're trying to do then is defined. You have a goal. There is a goal in your processing. Specific. It is not a maybe or I guess goal. You achieve this goal or your pre-clear isn't being done much good, that's all. I mean, it's one of these things that's quite sharp. You either shove your pre-clear up this tone scale and keep him up there and get him stabilized up here, or you're not doing him any good. Blunt and factual. So when you get him up this Dawn scale, you'll find out that he's easier and easier to work with. He's easier to live with. And he's doing a more efficient job for himself. His health is better and so forth. Now, we had a goal. We've had two or three assigned goals. One of the goals, the first one that we started out with, was get rid of all the engrams on a case. Well, we still got that as the long-range goal. That hasn't altered. Just short of that was get rid of the most of the secondaries and some of the engrams on the case. That was a release. That's good. And just short of that is, let's see if we can cheer this fellow up a little bit by running out what he's worrying about or getting the engram that's lying there that's really giving him trouble. That's an assist. But all of those things can be bundled up into the one package of pushing him up the tone scale. You can actually process and process and process and process and process somebody without bringing him up the tone scale. Now, I hate to have to tell you that. But what happens is that you start out with 20% theta and 80% N theta on the case, and then you keep investing this 20% theta into this N theta, and you keep interpolating, or the environment keeps interpolating, enough of the theta which is coming back out to keep this case static on the tone scale or even depress it on the tone scale. In other words, you're processing just a little heavier than you should be, and so, and maybe a little more authoritarianly, and you might not think authoritarianly of snap flow on the tone scale, the snap of the fingers and the demand of a phrase and the request who's talking or something like that. Boom! That interpolates them. So you're taking the 20% and you're investing it to clear up some of the 80. And sure enough, you get 5% of the 80 out in a session. And you put 5% of the 20 back in on the session. At the end of the session, this fellow might not have as many psychosomatic illnesses, but this person is no further up the tone scale. This person is still 20-80. Now, if he's being processed by a 0-5, I'll guarantee that this case will slump to 0-5. Just by continuous proximity to 0-5. Remember yesterday I was talking to you about sympathetic vibration. The auditor's tone is a sympathetic vibration for the preclear. So if the auditor is at 2-5 and the preclear is at 1-1, just by talking to the auditor, the preclear, certainly just during the session, will tend to come up to 2-5. He will tend to do that, just like that, without any processing. You keep that up month in and month out, and good ARC coming from the auditor from a 2-5 level, and your preclear will come on up the line. And of course, the preclear is having a little attention paid to him, and if he's kept talking about birds, bees, fish, anything in present time, even if he is permitted to wander up and down and around his life and tell you about how he drowned his grandmother's kittens and about that big boy that said those nasty sexual words to him and the time when he had this terrible fixation upon his mother and he had all of these obsessions, in other words, a standard psychoanalytic session, you can even make him well with that. Providing, I mean make him well, you can bring him up the tone scale for a while. You can bring him up and make him more or less coast along at 2-5. What happens? After he leaves, he starts associating with somebody that he picked out earlier as a friend who is down there around his 1-1 band, and as soon as he starts associating with this person, you get resonance, and what's 1-1 in this individual starts coming out again. And a short time after this has taken place, why, you have your case is slumped. Now, you get the idea. Here's resonance all by itself. If you go into a case at 1-5, with a 1-5 attitude, if that case is above 1-5, you will bring it down to 1-5. You will start to get incidents off of this case along the level of 1-5, if the case is above this level. You'll start to get data, or you'll get a present-time dramatization that is 1-5. If the case is below 1-5 and you attack with a 1-5 attitude, if you attack this case with a 1-5 attitude, this case will drive down because that is, after all, the ambition of 1-5 is to drive dumb. And you'll wind your case up 2 or 3 tenths of a point below where it had originally been found. 1-5 is, of course, authoritarianism. Here you do have the electric shock, the prefrontal lobotomy, and the rest of the thing. This case will be more tractable. This case can be put into a state that when you put his hand up like this, he'll leave his hand up. In other words, be completely tractable. That case is not well, though. The only way he can get well, and the only way this case can be safe, or the social order can be safe around this case, is to push this case up the tone scale. What ordinarily happens in a highly forceful and dramatic society during its pioneer days is that people come in to a new environment. They are very much extroverted because of the dangers in that environment. They act constructively, creatively, and destructively in order to fix up this environment so they can take it over. They pick up certain habits and customs along in this way that have to do with a lot of action. That impulse toward action continues. Engrams start to be laid into the coming generations. The first thing you know, it isn't a pioneer society anymore. It's a cream puff society. It's a 1951 society or something of the sort. And there's all of these, this tremendous action in its background is now coasting along as aberration. And people are depressed down along the line. For instance, you can't handle this society on the stalks and the punishment drive level that a pioneer society was trying to handle people on, because, boy, they were really handling violent people. These people were right out there rolling. These people had left their aberrations behind them. They were in an unrestimulative atmosphere. They had a tremendous goal. In other words, to keep these boys in line, you could put a tremendous amount of punishment up against them without stopping them. Not in this society. Hold up your little finger, and people stop. That's a hell of a note, but it's true. I know the guys that a lot of us served with in the war, we know that it was fashionable to sit down and say, I am idle and I do nothing. Everybody'd say, he's a great guy. He's idle. He's unproductive. All right. When the society then gets up to a point where it is now, a lot of people are down the tone scale. In other words, this action, you've got a lot of 0-5s, a lot of 1-1s, a few 1-5s, and so on, kicking around in the society. If you have a third of your population below 2.0, they're going to have a sort of a resonant effect upon the society. For instance, in order to suppress the criminal, the police pass rigorous laws. And then one day somebody steps off the curb and walks across the street just wrong, and he gets arrested. This interpolates him a little bit. This is because there are enough people around that are, quote, careless, in other words, are attempting suicide, purposefully, actually, that step out in front of cars and get run over and so on. The cops pass a law and say, that's not nice, you mustn't do that. All laws that are valid laws are directed toward the goal of inhibiting conduct below 2.0. So they're 2.0 suppressors. They're down from 2.0s. This is the conduct that the law and a social order objects to up to the point where it itself drops wholly below 2.0, and then everything turns around, and these things are very much condoned. These are the things to do. But here's your law banned from 2.0 down, and laws exist to inhibit this type of conduct. Well, that law has the resonance. It actually validates that this kind of conduct can exist. It is against the law to rape 2-year-old children. There is such a law. Well, for God's sakes, I mean, who'd think of this? But the law says so. And you hear about it once in a while in the newspapers, so on. There's a resonance going through the society of that band, and that makes it tough on the society. Now, because of the non-survival activity of people on a low band, more and more suppression is put against the society in order to inhibit such conduct. And lower and lower and lower on the tone scale society goes. You as auditors are auditing in a society which is unfortunately far too low on the tone scale. And the people you come in contact with usually are way down. They are in environments. Let's say here's a fellow that you're processing, and he comes to the session, and he seems to be in perfectly good order. And after the session, and he goes home, and you know that this fellow's pretty good shape. And he comes to the session next time, and he's down the tone scale again. So you bring him up the tone scale, and you process him for a couple of hours. Then you send him home, and he's feeling good, but he goes home, and he's down the tone scale. So you bring him up. I mean, you can keep this up for a long time. Fortunately, you actually can win eventually. But this fellow is leaving your environment, wherever it is on the tone scale, and he's going back to a 1-1 environment. He goes back to the 1-1 environment. He drops in, let's say, 22 hours of the day are spent in this 1-1 environment. 2 hours of the day are spent in your environment. Which one's going to win? It's a preponderance of time. You could take this case and just keep up the proposition of just trying to process out the last 22 hours since you saw him. And you've almost got your hands full. You can keep this up on and on and on, because he's going into a lower band society than you are. Now, you take these newspapers that sit on the stands. Just estimate the level of interest of this society. Take a look at the daily newspaper. Take a look at the most popular ones. And you'll find out what this society buys. In other words, the newspaper is a resonance in the society. It's a vibration in the society. It keeps the social order about on that level. It tries to. All it's really trying to do is sell papers. So it just brings up with more volume the most interested level of the society. And that will tell you a great deal. Now, I went back through the files of the National Intelligencer. National Intelligencer was being published about the time Washington, D.C. was being built. And it came on up almost, I suppose, or maybe a little bit past 1900, and then ceased to exist. But its files are all on record. You find such interesting things in the National Intelligencer as a barrel of whiskey, aged 5 years, $5. That's right, 1872. I got fascinated reading those things, but what I was going through was the tone level of the society. What sold papers when? Well, sir, it wasn't until after the Civil War that police notices were published in the National Intelligencer. And then they were published in a little tiny box on the last page at the bottom. And they consisted of just one or two small items. But as little time went on, about 1880, we find that this little tiny item has been stepped up to being about half a column. But we still find one sentence recountings of rather awful crimes. Last night, Maria Georgiana was murdered, the star from the Metropolitan Opera Company of New York City, that has been playing in the town, was found murdered in her dressing room. Period. Next item. This little tiny script on the back end of the page. Now, people are prone to turn around to William Randolph Hearst and say, this is the dog that really loused us up by introducing yellow journalism. Nah, the society just started buying yellow journalism. He caught up with the bandwagon. He was quicker to recognize it than somebody else. He got to a point where somebody went down to Cuba and take some photographs for him, cable back. There's no war down here in 1892, something like that. This fellow cabled back, there's no war down here. Hearst said, you send me the photographs and I'll give you the war. He did, because people wanted to buy 1-5 right about then. I don't know quite what they're buying now, but it's sure way down. Now, when you're dealing then with a present time environment that comes along on this band of the tone scale, you recognize that your preclear is going to be resonating along that band of the environment. War with Russia, bang, bang, this, that, Korean War, yak, yak. Five percenters arrested yesterday, 21 communist leaders indicted, yak. Good, valuable data. Good, valuable stuff. You're working uphill on this tone scale, then, aren't you? Not only are you taking a fellow out of an order, social order, which is finds that kind of news to be the most digestible news, but you're trying to bring him up above this point from a childhood environment that was way back down and so on. In other words, you got a job on your hands. Unfortunately, as I will tell you about tomorrow, we got a technique which resolves quite a bit of this. And fortunately, the human being is a pretty resilient item. But if you don't pay attention to this tone scale, then what's going to happen? You'll place this person fairly static at about the level of the society or the level of his family or the level of the auditor. And there he'll sit. And are you going to get a 4.0 out of this? No, you're not. Unfortunately, a person, in order to run everything out of the bank and so forth, has to be pretty well up on the tone scale. If you could just start out with a 4.0 case, boy, would he audit well. That's an unfortunate thing. You're starting it backwards in Dianetics. We have to start the toughest amount of stuff that's on the case comes and has to be attacked when the case is lowest on the tone scale. Now, this is bad. We've got a little handy Jim Dandy supersonic vibrator coming up. By the way, in Seattle, there's Manning's Coffee Shop, and they have a great big fan that blows across their coffee roaster out into the street. And people go walking by and walk in with a cup of coffee. Well, the Japanese, during the last war, developed quite a bit in supersonics. They wanted some supersonic hand weapons or machine guns or something of the sort that could kill people at several hundred yards. And they did develop, however, and explore what was known as the black band on the wavelength bands. And they invented gimmicks and gehoojits that would actually create vibrations along in this level. Well, a washing machine company in the United States picked this up and found out you could wash clothes with one of them. You take a little unit and it vibrates at a supersonic rate and it pounds the dirt out of clothes. And they manufactured these, and one day they found out they weren't selling any. They looked at the books and they found out they weren't making any money. So they went around and asked people why, and housewives said, for some strange reason, I just feel terrible around that machine. So the company got very smart and went back and figured out a few things and a few angles and put out one at a different vibration rate. And now they sell those things rather easily because people feel just wonderful around them. In other words, there's some lower harmonic or the actual wavelength of the mist, which is in N mixed with theta, is along in that supersonic band someplace one could postulate. In other words, there's a messed vibration there. Very interesting. Well, that really postulates terrific stuff. But what we're going to do is get some of these washing machine motors and squirt them out across the street so people walk past the foundation, you see. And then we'll mount a couple just outside the processing room so the auditor holds the pre-clear there in conversation for a couple of minutes right after the session and finally says, how do you feel? Well, this tone scale, all I'm pointing out, has an actual, evidently, has an actual vibration rate for its various levels. There is a wavelength. There's an ARC wavelength all the way up the line. Now, we maybe can't measure it in theta, and we might not be able to do anything about it on the theta level for some time until we know how to manufacture theta, but we certainly can approximate it in the mesh universe. Now, it's a good job somebody's going to have to tackle this one of these days, is just go on up the line and find out exactly what are the vibration rates in mesh. for each one of these points. It's very interesting for an auditor. He reaches over to the vibrator and he turns on 0.5, grief. Okay, now go back and blow the secondary. Blows. That's right. It would, too. You just make the fellow's messed part of the organism, vibrate so strongly to this level on the tone band that he's there. What I'm pointing out is now that we're evidently playing around with something which is highly mechanical when we play around with this tone scale. Messed gets along best at about 4-0. The messed part of an organism gets along best at 4-0. It gets along very, very fine at 4-0. I think above that line, it starts to evaporate. Have you seen any saints lately? Well, they get pretty thin, pretty mangy. But down from 4-0, it's less and less an optimum joining up with theta. And the body is worse and worse off. But it seems to function at a certain vibration rate. This is nothing very peculiar because people like James Jean and so on who've done a little thinking on the subject of what is reality, anybody that does any thinking on this subject eventually comes to the conclusion that he's dealing with vibration rates. The vibration rates of what, we don't bother to say. But all matter, energy, could be, really, would be a motion in space and time, but what space and time are and if they're a motion or not, I wouldn't be able to figure out just now. It's kind of confusing, but the whole thing is, evidently, all that reality is a motion, a certain wavelength of motion. If you go on that level, it achieves results. It achieved results in this tone scale. Now, we can't give you the rate of vibration yet, and we can't give you this machine yet, but if a young man that keeps hanging around the foundation doesn't hurry up and get me one of those washing machine motors, I'm going to break his skull in. We've been going on this project now for some little time. There's all these patents are available, by the way. They were Japanese patents, and they are usable under license through Washington. Now, theoretically, you mean the vibrating gadget? Well, that's fine. It put a lot of us out of work, though. We wouldn't want that. They do.
A scientist in Chicago has a machine that you can vibrate the amount of a plate and can reproduce any sensation on the scale. Pain, warmth, and feelings of pleasure. Very important.
Sure. It's quite unique.
That's right.
And we can really take off with this thing. So something like that's going to come to pass. But it'll never come to the pass of no auditor. For good reason. Not until we find out how to bottle theta. Now, one of these days, if we suddenly learn how to bottle up theta and so on and do other things with it and handle it, that might be the case. But the auditor actually injects into it enough to disinterpolate. Actually, evidently, all that would happen if you used a vibrator of this magnitude, about all that would happen, would be that you would make it possible for your N-mest, or interpolated mest, which is holding the N-theta in line, to bleed off, and all the auditor would have to do is keep straightening out the theta side of it, if these theories and postulates are correct. All that has to be gone into considerably. What's important right now is the fact that here we have all this on a graph. It's derived in advance of the other's arrival. We've had this graph for some little time, and here we're making the fullest use out of it. Now, by observation, we find out what the behavior is on this, and we find out the behavior holds constantly, pretty constant on this thing. There are various aspects and manifestations of it, and there are certain ways you ask questions about it. And I think after we take a short break, we will go into exactly how you apply it to the pre-clear.